Welcome to Connect and Grow Radio and Podcast Show with your host, Jackie Grant. So all going to plan today. And we gotta love technology because I have been having a few issues with it. It's not really been my friend lately, but hey, we're here, we're live, and all going to plan. Constance Jordan should be joining us today. So I'm going to just chat with you for a few minutes before we go through the process of joining in and having Constance join us. So today's show, I really would love to talk about change and how we hey, Constance, hello. Welcome. We are live. I was just sharing with the listeners that today, you know, we're going to focus on change and how we go with it and how we deal with the obstacles, the challenges that life throws in our way. And I think for you and I, we've known each other for so long, right? Like, I was trying to remember the other day how long I've known you for. Like, it would have to be over 10 years, right?
I'm going to say it's probably closer to 16 years.
Yeah. 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 Incredible. And what I love, like, before we go into the whole topic, what I love about our friendship is we can go months, if not a couple of years, unintentional, but life happens, right?
And then we just pick up. I don't think it's been a couple of years.
I don't, probably not. But yeah. But my point is that we can go a long time without talking and pick it up like the conversation just finished yesterday.
Absolutely.
And that to me is a really good friendship, a true friendship.
Yeah. I know, because sometimes I was saying, oh, I haven't heard from Jackie in a while. I'll have to like see what she's up to.
Yeah, I know, I do the same thing. And then, I don't know, like, yeah, like life happens. But yeah. So Constance, let's share with the audience, because some of them know my story, but let's share a little bit about, like, for you, I think if we start at the most recent stuff and then we can just bring in the earlier times a little bit as we go with flow. But I know that I know a little while ago that you had a stroke, and watching your journey of how you've approached it, the recovery, I really feel just my personal opinion, and so my disclaimer is that all information in this show is general use only, so always seek professional advice, people.
Absolutely.
But just, I really believe your attitude and your mindset has had a massive impact on the progress you've made. So do you want to share with the listeners a little bit about what's happened and where you are today and how you've been dealing with it?
Yeah. Tomorrow, well, it's today for you guys.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Hey, remember that show that we did with you and Martin? And I remember, I think it was Martin, one of you said to me, hey, what's it like in the future?
That was me. It was New Year's Eve. It's like, so what's happening, you know, what's happening in the future?
Yeah, that was a good show. Yeah. So, okay, go ahead.
Actually, 4 months, November 16th, I had a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I actually got to go to the hospital yesterday, or I guess 2 days ago for you guys. And do a campaign. And I got to talk to a patient there. She was an older woman. And she was, you know, they were helping her walk and teaching her. And they were pointing me out because I always gave them a hard time. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm on blood pressure medication that messes with my throat. And she's like, you had a stroke 4 months ago, because you can't tell. You just can't tell by looking at me. And I, you know, I'm walking without the cane. And I had to learn to walk again. Yeah. You know, and I told her, I said, you stay focused. And I said, this will be you too. Mm. You know, because she at least was up and around. I mean, it was probably 3 weeks before they even tried to get me up and around.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Yeah, so you had this stroke. It's really scary for a lot of people. But what was your approach? Like, some people go into a bit of victim mentality. Like,
that's what they said in the hospital.
Yeah.
The hospital said that. And I said, first of all, okay, I know we're going to go back a little bit, but I have my boys and they set the bar so freaking high. There's no way I could go into victim mode. And I kind of resent them for it. I'm not going to lie.
Hey, do we want to clarify for the listeners who don't know what, yes, like who you're referring to there and that, please?
Yeah. My son passed at 16 years old, 4 months after leukemia diagnosis in 2007, 16 years ago, October. Mm-hmm. And then my husband, it'll be 6 years in May. And he had tonsillar cancer. And the way they handled, I don't know how they did it, because they handled everything, the treatment and everything, with such grace and courage. How could I not?
Like, yeah,
I said, they keep the bar high.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked at it as, okay, let's see what this is all about.
Yeah, what are you trying to teach me here?
Yeah, like I told you, it's like when, because I got to reflect a lot and I realized that the stroke happened for me and not to me.
Yeah, do you want to talk to that a little more?
Yeah, and you and I are woo-woo. I know some people don't like that. We're very metaphysical. And of course, even when Andrew was in the hospital in 2007, we kind of blew people's minds. And I was telling the doctor, I said, because all of them, all the healthcare practitioners are like, oh, this must be hard for you being out, because I was in 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I said to the one doctor, I said, to be honest with you, I said, this has been an amazing experience. And he looked at me.
Did you get crazy looks?
Oh, yes. And I wasn't on any medication. I'm not on any medication. I'm not on any
drug stuff. Looking at the drug chart going, what the heck have we given this person?
Yeah, I know. And I looked at him. I said, no, it's been an amazing. Now, I didn't tell him what I told you.
Yeah, well, we'll just keep that between you and I, right? Like, yeah.
Well, I will share it because I have no problem sharing it if people are open to it. But, yeah. I actually felt like I was in the arms of my son the entire time. I felt so much love and peace and determination. And I thought, oh, my God, is this what he felt? Mm. Because he had such grace with horrendous leukemia treatment. And I didn't know how he did it, but I got into an argument with him, to be honest with you, because, I was trying to have a pity party. I'm like, how did you do that? I'm like, oh, that's right. Me and Daddy were with you all the time. I'm here alone physically,
Yeah. Right. Like, thanks guys. It's just me.
Yeah. And Martin was catered to by his family. And then me, when I got here and I'm like, I had people that would visit my one friend would come in every day, and that's great. But, it's only a few hours where, with my son, we didn't leave his side. With Martin, he was catered to. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I did have it out with him. Just going, yeah, well, I have it work, even though, they went through horrendous treatment.
Yeah.
But to have the gift of feeling such love and appreciation and safety, I don't know here in Northern Ireland, a lot of people that could spend, because basically I had 5 weeks to deal with myself.
Yeah.
In my face with myself, and to really go deep in healing and to look at the things I wanted to release, old patterns that didn't serve me and stinking thinking, as they call it. And I just to feel the love around me that entire time, it was an amazing gift.
Oh, I love that, the way that you're looking at it, because I've said to a couple of friends, life is so, so busy and instant. And we even got to talk about this in another show this week, that it's kind of like instant gratification or instant expectation of responses, or it's instant, instant, instant. But Whereas how often do we really stop and go, you know what, I'm not going to look at my phone, or I'm not going to look at the computer, or I'm not going to look at something. And even though, yes, you were in hospital for a stroke, you actually had that opportunity, as you shared, to actually stop and go,
yeah,
all right, I've got nothing else to do. I might as well do this.
And I mean, healing from a stroke is definitely a full-time job, because I had no use of my right hand. I lost my right leg. I mean, I could still move my foot, but I mean, the strength was gone. My face was crooked. People had a hard time understanding me. So it ended up being like a full-time job. I mean, I couldn't be bored. I had to speak. I mean, these people were giving me homework. You know, I had to cognitively do things, and then I would do the leg work, and, you know, just trying to build up my right leg, and then, you know, trying to, and there is some woo-woo stuff in the hospital, because they said, you need to visualize your hand.
Wow.
Feel your hand. I said, I actually feel my thumb touching each one of my fingers. They said, you need to feel that. And yeah. I don't know if you saw this post, but I realize it was pretty profound. My arm wasn't moving and I still was bedridden, I never had more love for my body than I did then.
Wow. Yeah.
And because I remember rubbing my arm and just saying, I just need to love you better. I just need to send you love. And I realized I really, truly appreciated and loved my body more than ever in my entire life. You know, especially, you know, as a teenager, we all, especially as women, Jesus Christ, what we're put through. And I thought, I just appreciated, because I couldn't walk. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do anything by myself. I mean, I had to, people had to help me pee, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was really jealous. Oh, look at you with your two legs working. Show off. I mean, it even comes back to me today. I was in Belfast with a friend. We hopped the rails like hobos, and because we got free bus passes. And yeah. I was in the bathroom, and I remembered in the bathroom, I couldn't even tear a toilet roll. I had to use my teeth.
Oh, whoa. Oh.
Yeah. And I got, look how far I've come in 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really a short period of time. Yes. Really. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'd love the listeners to really connect with a little bit more is you use humor. Like, there's so much where, like, because you've done stand-up comedy and you're working on the play, like, I mean, the strokes kind of slowed things down a little, but it hasn't stopped your drive to do it. And I think that's one of the things is that sometimes when we have an obstacle or a challenge in our life, and I know for me, I get so frustrated. Like, it's like, just do this, just like work, like, you know, internet, just connect or whatever. And what I started to do this morning when I was having a few issues and I was like so annoyed, I'm like, you know what? What is the humor in this? What is the message? And I think sometimes when we stop and can change our perspective of the challenge, so it's still there. It's still a challenge, right? Like, we're still going to achieve it. But I've noticed, and this is what I love about you, is that when you can laugh about it, it feels so much different, right? But how did, like, has that always been who you are? Like, have you always been able to see the humor, or was that something that you developed?
I talk about it in my first book, and the moment, because I was bullied and beat up at home. I had the trifecta of childhood abuse. I was beat up in school and picked on because I just was not a pretty child. And at 11 years old, I just made a decision. I was tired of crying all the time and I wanted to laugh more. So there was a bully, you know, there was these girls. I don't know what I did, but I was 11 or 12 years old. I had to be 11. And I made them laugh. Mm-hmm. And the bully said, leave her alone. She's funny. I went, oh, okay.
Right.
I realized the power of humor. And mm-hmm. So I started to see the funny in everything. Now, I didn't do stand-up comedy till I was like 42. And, you know, I it was about my life living with a medium, you know, with a guy who sees dead people in God's waiting room. I do know. And then the crazy thing is when Andrew passed in 07, right, in 2013, we were on tour and Martin, you know, had his first illness with the diverticulitis. And while he was recouping in Belfast with his aunt, you know, we were at his aunt's, I heard my son go write a comedy set about losing me. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
I'm out of the box as it is. What is wrong with you? No. And then I started getting ideas and I said, oh, I see what you're doing. No, no, I'm not doing this. And I'm like, well, this is kind of funny. The night you passed, I said, and then I did say to him, I said, if you had a body right now, I'd slap you.
That's like, and dude.
He won. I wrote a comedy set about losing a child. And then my husband passed 10 and a half years later. Now I added to the grief set being a widow.
Yeah.
Then I was only a week out of the hospital, 6 weeks since my stroke.
Right.
This is right before New Year's. It was the end of December. And I went to my local comedy, you know, it's an open mic. And Rory, who knows me, you know, he said, do you want to go up? And I'm like, what? Okay. It was the first time in 20 years I did stand-up comedy, not prepared at all.
Right.
Had no material that I was going to do. And I did 7 minutes of my stroke.
Oh, okay. How did the audience take it?
They loved it. They were, in fact, one of my friends who's a comedian, and she's a tough, you know, cookie. And she said, you got a show building there. That was amazing. So I'm performing tomorrow night.
Yeah.
More of my stroke set.
Okay. So now when you go up, you've got like three areas to choose from. So it is really turning that grief into human joy and love with respect, obviously, because, you know, for those listeners out there that are getting defensive right now, like, this is done with love, people. Yeah. Like, I've actually heard Constance, so I can say that. But, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm it's about my life and my situation. And, you know, when I started with, he won. And when I would do open mics with the, you know, losing a child, and people came up to me and said, I really felt bad for laughing, but that was really funny.
Because that's it. Like, sometimes, you know, because as you know, I lost my daughter. She was stillborn. And then I have a stepdaughter who was murdered. And, like, you know, often we're like, oh, don't talk, like, don't laugh at that, or don't, you know, that's kind of because it's serious. And it's like, but serious creates stress. And then we're releasing stress-related hormones, which are not necessarily good for our body. But when we can release more serotonin and get a bit more of a dopamine fix, then, which is all natural, then we're actually causing our body to start to relax a bit more, which I said to you just before when we were testing things, you know, I said, like, kind of ironic, and you kind of hit into this as well, that you had a stroke now when life's like taking off in a different direction.
Oh, what? WTF.
Yeah, but I think the thing is maybe, like, you're coming through it, and I know that we can look at it in a different way, that maybe this is kind of that trifecta for the show and the, like, even come into the play a little bit too. So do you want to tell the audience a bit about the play and where that's at?
My God. I brag about this play, right? Because, I mean, I'm so passionate about it. Even though I wrote it, if it wasn't for my first and second director, I wouldn't be as passionate. The first director pulled it out of me. My second director took it to another level when I got to a theater and everything, a small theater. And it's about grief. And my first director had me write the hardest parts of my life as a fairy tale.
Right.
And everything in this play actually happened. The fairy tale sequences, air quotes, actually happened. And you know what? I knew I was on to something the second time I did it, because I volunteer at a theater and on Fridays with teenagers. And there was like six or seven of them in there. They had me sign their tickets. They wanted my autograph, and they want me to do the play again. And mm-hmm. it's on grief. It's about, mm-hmm. it's called Good Grief, Turning Devastation into Celebration.
Mm.
And it, yeah, and that's basically, I mean, when I first, you know, Martin and I were trying to think about, because I had the grief set and everybody's like, that should be a one woman show. So Martin and I, we were so far out of our league on what to do. Oh my God. Mm. Now having two directors, I'm just absolutely blown away and so proud of this. I just think it's such an important play. There's so many levels and power and beyond yeah. grief, just really cool, like universal things that I just was like, and you know, it's in my second book, everything that, you know, about Andrew, but just messages. Okay. The one part was actually from John Denver, but an experience Andrew had with him, but it was yeah. so powerful. I mean, there was times, you know, I would be in rehearsals and I would just cry because just feeling the power and the words and the emotion. It's just an amazing play. And I, like I said, I know I wrote it, but if it would be nothing, absolutely nothing without my two directors.
Yeah.
I have a whole new respect for directors. I mean, you can write whatever you want. Unless you have a good director, it's crap. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. It's like when I started Connect and Grow magazine, because I wanted something where I don't like this language, but I wanted something where everyday people could be seen. And so part of it gives a voice to people with a disability, because there's a section called Uniquely Me, and that matches a book I've written. So I wrote the first magazine. I just threw it together because, as you know, I've written, like, I don't know, 18 books or something and seven bestsellers. You know,
I remember your first one. I'm like, what the hell? Yes. What? I've written two. Yeah.
Yes. Stephen Farmer wrote the foreword on one of them, so that was pretty cool. So I was like, well, I can do this. I've written some books and people have actually bought them and got positive feedback, so yeah, I can do this. So I put it together and it was like 22 pages. And then the next one, I'd met a lady and she talked about nutrition and plant-based diet, things like that. So I went, okay, let's, like, she can write an article, because she said, you know, she writes. So now I have three writers, and I am looking at probably around May I'll revisit this, of like adding in a bit more, because we've got a book section. So if people have written a book, which we'll get your book in there at some point too. And then, you know, and then events. And because we're sending it out, like the articles are online, we can reach so many people around the world. And we are just playing with, we've had one little hiccup with global distribution, but we are like sorting that out to get it out there. And I want the magazine to be about building community. We're covering health, fitness, and I really want to even have a music section in there as well, because it you can get the PDF and all of that. But without adding in these three people to write other parts of it, I just felt like it was kind of like the Jackie show, where Jackie's just writing everything. And I really wanted to bring in that variety, but it also, with their content, it helps me to expand as well. So teamwork is so important.
Oh, yeah. I was actually working on my third book and in a publishing class with Joni Late, and then I had the stroke and couldn't finish the course. Now, it is recorded, so I can go back. And it's interesting. I thought I knew what my third book was going to be, but apparently I was wrong. Hearing from several different people, and I'm like, all right, I just got to focus on my healing right now, and just because I can't even take that on.
Yeah. Just got to have that space. Yeah.
I haven't written 18 books, but I have, you know, I think I have one more in me. Some people say two more. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Because about Martin's and my story. Like, you know, because, I mean, people are, especially living here, I live in Northern Ireland, and they hear I'm from Florida, and they're like, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, the weather.
Yeah. It's not the people or the atmosphere. It's just the weather.
Yeah, it's the cold, wet weather.
No, so what we're also going to do at some point when I've got the opportunity for the listeners is Martin was a musician as well. He did write a song for me when I had a previous radio show. So we're going to go find that somewhere. And then we're going to bring a few more of Martin's songs on throughout our songs over the next period of time. I haven't got them all for today, but one of the things is that its attitude is so important, especially in this world where we're online, right? So the minute you put something up, you're going to get your lovers, your supporters, but you're also going to get your people that disagree and, dare I say, hate it. And people are not shy nowadays of telling you exactly what they think. And that's where I feel and you inspire me is the attitude. Like you said, you turned it around when being bullied to say something that was funny, and now that has been your life.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, now that you bring that up, when I had the stroke, I think I might have still been in the hospital. And this woman, you know, she was on my phone. I don't even know who she was, but she says, "Well, you need to stop with the stroke jokes." And I was like, "Ain't gonna happen." Mm-hmm. I said, "My family has dealt with major trauma, and the Irish do too, through humor." And I said, "I'm talking about my life, not anybody else's, and nobody's gonna tell me how I'm gonna deal with my life." Now, here's the interesting thing I want to let people know, because, you know, I get like free counseling here, which I could never have in the States. So I took advantage of everything after Martin passed. And I was going through a lot between losing my son and then, you know, I lose my husband. And the one psychologist student, right, he kept saying, well, you know, he kept sticking, first of all, he's kept talking about my childhood. I'm like, oh my God, move beyond my childhood, will you please?
Right,
And people hear about it, I'm like, oh my God, yes, yeah, whatever. But he says to me, are you using humor to hide? I said, no, I'm using humor as a tool to heal. Humor is a tool to heal. Now, because you want to know why it's helping me heal? Because I'm not a drug addict. I'm not an alcoholic. I am actually using humor to heal. I'm not some comic up there that when I'm off stage, I'm just popping pills.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not that kind of comic. What you see on stage is what you see off stage.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really about...
I'm passionate about that. I'm just trying to say, oh, you're hiding behind humor. No, I'm using humor to heal. Because I said, what are these other people doing? Popping pills and not feeling. I'm feeling it. I mean, my son had us laughing the night he passed.
Oh.
You know? I mean, it's in my heart because, I mean, I wrote that. I mean, Andrew made me write it, so it's really him. I'm like, yeah, that was kind of funny. All right. You know? So I blame him anyway. But I mean, he did. We had laughter. Okay, I'll give you one of them. Now, not the night he passed. It was a couple of nights, a couple of days later, and Karen Parker was there, and Karen Anderson, and da-da-da-da. And you know those people, and anybody who's listening, who's an EVP. So we're all talking about what we're going to do with my son's ashes. I go off into like a daydream, and I hear my son, oh, I knew I should have ate more. And I'm like, dude, you didn't just say that to me. He goes, what, mommy? Too soon? And I, you know, I'm like looking at my fake watch going, it's been 3 days. Yeah, it's a little soon.
Yeah.
And then when I told everybody else what I heard Andrew say, we all started laughing. He shifted from the devastation into the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Humor as a tool.
Yeah. And that's it. It's like... I have the diagnosis of autism level 2 and ADHD. And, you know, so sometimes I can be so black and white. Like yesterday I was on the phone trying to solve something and the guy on the phone said to me, oh, just do this. No, he said to me, you could do this, right? So he said you could. And so I heard do this, so I did it. And he goes, what happened to the phone? Like you're sounding like a robot. And I went, well, you told me to turn the Wi-Fi calling off. And he goes, yeah, I didn't mean right now. Okay. And because I can kind of laugh about that, it was like, oh, right. You know, and I own it. I go, like, in my ADHD mode, I was hyperfixated, so I forgot to eat or I forgot to do this because I'm focused. But it's what it is, right? Like, and I think that when we own stuff, we just go, well, that's what I heard. Yeah, no, I didn't mean it right now. Oh, right.
Oh, see, well. You know what ADHD means. Already dialed in the higher dimension because Andrew was they labeled him ADHD, ADD, learning disabled. I finally told him, you're teaching disabled.
Yeah.
Because it's my son.
Approach.
You know, my son, you know, he understood quantum physics at 6. Are you kidding me? I did. I told him, you're teaching disabled. We're homeschooling him. Basically, F you.
Yeah. We're done. Yeah. And a lot of people are choosing more now to homeschool their children that have those traits because it's ability. And you're going to laugh, and that's super cool because I'm writing another book. well, the first draft, right? The first draft is done.
I would say ADD much.
No way. Anyway, I just felt really inspired after a lot of people were like, oh, you know, you're rude or, oh, no, you shouldn't be doing this. And I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like my life and I can write it. So the book is, it's called I Am a Person, Not a Label. And I'm working on the subtitle because the thing is that, yes, labels are important. It's like the symptoms that you experience when you went to the hospital because then they go, oh, okay, it could be a stroke, and if that's it, we need to do this and this, right? Yeah. So they are important, but if we all sit back and, like you said, like the different definition of ADHD, right? And so if we sit and hold on to a label too tight, it becomes us, but it also can be a hindrance or a crutch of like, yeah, I can't do that because I have A, B, C, or D. It's not a judgment. It's really a mindset thing because, like, I say, well, today I'm in an autistic brain set full of traits, so I'm going to be really literal. So if you say something and I don't get it, or, hey, I'm in ADHD, so we're having a lot more fun today. And I own the traits, but I use the words that people may or may not understand. And because over here in Australia, autism, that there's a lot of children being diagnosed with autism now, and a lot of children are getting onto the what we have is a national disability insurance scheme. So they're getting on that. Now the government's going, well, yeah, we're going to take a percentage of you back off this scheme and put it into education. But it's around awareness. It's around how do we engage the people and bring out their strengths rather than put them in a box and just treat them one particular way.
Yeah, because, I mean, when they labeled Andrew all of those things, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know what it is, you know, with these kids that, you know, Andrew would be – his 33rd birthday will be coming up in May. You look at these kids, and I love these little kids because I'm like, they're out of the box. And it's like, no, because this is the thing that I said about in the States. The thing is that the school system was set for the Industrial Revolution, right? Let's do this so they can get factory jobs. Well, the kids like my son coming in, they're into quantum physics. They're into other things that really matter than a factory job. And the school system needs to change. And they, I saw them killing my son's spirit. And Martin and I are like, yeah, they're not going to do that. They're just not going to do that. And we pulled him out. And he was so happy to be homeschooled. And even when he was getting high school age, I said, do you want to go to high school with your friends? He goes, nope. And he was very protective of his energy. He's been meditating since he was 8 years old. He knew how to work with energy. He was making wands for our, you know, metaphysical store, and he was Reiki 2 attuned. at a certain age, and then he wanted to be Reiki 3. Martin's like, no, you're too young, you're too young. We were in Ireland for an ATP with Doreen Virtue. We were staffing. One of the staffers, we were in her parents' summer home, which was close to the hotel where ATP was. Mm-hmm. And she was just, having whatever meltdown. And Andrew walked by, touched her on the shoulder, and she just collapsed, sobbing. And Martin was like, what's wrong? She goes, I have never, ever felt love like that before. Now, he was 12. Mm. He was 12. And Andrew had been hounding him. And so Martin's like, Andrew, come here. He goes, what'd I do? He goes, you want to be a tuner Reiki 3? And he goes, yeah. And this is what I love is that what Martin said. Now, on the property, there was a fairy ring. And he attuned Andrew to Reiki 3 on the fairy ring. And Martin said his attitude was like, okay, Daddy, thanks. And then walked off because it's like, okay, yeah, now I'm Reiki 3. That's good. I need that.
Typical kid. Oh, God. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous. Yeah. And that's the thing that I know, even and just for me personally, when I get so serious in life and I tend to notice that all I can ever see is problems. And, if you're listening to this and you can connect to this, it's like it's really a matter of sometimes journaling can help, because sometimes when we go out and tell somebody else what's bothering us, it doesn't actually fix the problem. Sometimes it can amplify it and make it worse, or we sit in the negative energy depending on how they respond to it. And I remember the times that I would talk to Martin, so here we are, I'm in Australia, he's in the States or Ireland, wherever he was at the time, and talking to him, and I'm like going, so, yep, this is happening and I don't know what to do about it. And in my true ADHD or autistic trait manner of can't let it go till I've got an answer. And one day he said to me, what if I can't give you an answer? What if the answer is it just is?
He's so good at that stuff. You want to slap him, but you know he's right.
And I'm like going, okay, I've heard you and I don't like it, but okay.
He was a Libra and he was just so, he was really good for me because I'm a Leo. Apparently I'm a double Leo. Right. And I always told people, I said, don't let that skinny body fool you. There's a supernatural hero in there.
Yeah.
Because he can handle me.
All righty. So, if you could give the listeners, I'm going to say one, but if it goes into more, that's super cool. One piece of guidance, maybe advice, which is obviously general advice, people. What would you share with them as a huge takeaway for today and to help them really enjoy their life?
Oh, my God. You're not going to believe what the boys, I just heard them say. Oh, my God. And it's so simple. Okay, I'll give you two. They got a little more serious. The first thing, because we ended Andrew's service this way and Martin's service this way. Right. Always look on the bright side of life by Monty Python.
Oh, yeah, Monty Python.
And then when Martin had asked Andrew after he had passed, he goes, how should we live our lives, right? Martin was expecting this big dissertation. Martin really had no books published. I had two. Ha.
Yeah.
Because we had a friendly competition. And so he's thinking Andrew's going to give him like this big book and blah, blah, blah. And all Andrew said was, live your life with no regrets and die laughing. And then I ended, my comedy set about Andrew going or smiling like he did, because he put a smile on his face after he passed. I want to talk a little bit about that if we have time, about how
100%,
How Andrew led his life, right? I'm not talking about, because I analyze this stuff about, because he's my son. No, it's not. Because even his friend Wesley said to me, he goes, if I didn't know better, I would have thought he was Jesus himself. He was that good. But my son, what he would do, he was always asking, how's your day going? Mm-hmm. Always, right? And he was always happy, always. Now we realize why, because he, on some level, he knew he wasn't going to be here long. And his friends would say to him, especially as teenagers, you know, 15, 16, why are you always happy? Because it annoyed them. And they go, what is there not to be happy about? Right?
Right.
And with one story that that's in my play, this one is such a powerful story. So I helped my son after a month of being in bed, couldn't help him. You know, he couldn't get out of bed. I help him into the bathroom, right? And I'm sitting on the floor and he's hooked up to his IV. And, you know, because Martin and I, and with Andrew, because he was so pure and, you know, even looking at it metaphysically, you know, with Louise Hay, leukemia blocking the flow of life. I'm like, are you kidding me? This kid was so full of life. He loved life.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I said to him, I said, you know what, muck, because, you know, Irish term, mucker, muck is, you know, your best friend.
And oh, yeah.
He's always known as the muck. I said, you know what, yeah. when we get out of here, we're only going to remember the good times. And he goes, I know, mommy. He goes, you know what else? And I go, what, honey? And he says, I'm happy. And I'm looking at him going, he's on no fun drugs. He's on none of that shit, right? Mm-hmm. And I looked at him, I go, what? I mean, this is a kid that couldn't swallow his own saliva, let alone eat. He lost his hair. He was getting chemo shot into his spine twice a week. All of this shit. And and his friends are out having all this summertime fun. And I'm looking at him going, what the hell? And he says, but you see this, all this stuff, mommy? You see this stuff around? You know, he's pointing to the IV. He's pointing to the stuff in the hospital room. He goes, none of this decides my happiness. Only I do. And I'm happy. Now, if this kid can be happy going through aggressive leukemia, lumbar punctures twice a week and chemo shot into his spine. Are you kidding me? And he said, that's what I'm talking about. The bar is high. So how can I not be happy? I just had a near stroke. Really?
Yeah. You know, you got nothing to be sad about. Come on now.
I know. But I mean, you know, if he could, he could choose to be happy. He realized happiness was a choice.
Yeah.
And he chose to be happy at 16 years old, going through aggressive leukemia treatment. I mean, that's how high the bar is. And I thought, you know, people waiting in line and they're bitching, or somebody cuts them off in traffic. Really?
Yeah.
You know, and then again, have a stroke where you can't even pee alone.
Yes.
You have to have people with you, or you can't move your arm. You can't even squeeze a toothpaste. You can't even brush your teeth with your right hand, you know? I mean, it starts putting things into perspective. And this is the other thing I'm getting from my boys, is that what we learned through the leukemia experience with Andrew, people keep going, you know, and worrying about this, that, and the other in the moment, you know, and you know, oh, tomorrow. Let me tell you what we learned with our son, the only moment we were guaranteed was the moment we were in, and we made the most of it.
That is such a great reminder, because as I'm listening to you and as you're sharing and some of the stuff, like I already knew, but it's good to hear it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that, you know, we do sometimes sit there and go, oh, well, what if this happens? And I remember attending, I think it was like a week thing with Chris Howard. And anyway, then I got to meet very briefly Sir Richard Branson. Oh. And one of his sayings is, you know, and I remember talking to him briefly, because when he first approached me, I was sitting out looking out at a stadium going, oh, I want to be center stage at this stadium and be able to touch like the hearts and souls of so many people in a positive way. That's kind of my goal. And he sort of asked me he said, you know, what are you thinking about? And I said, how do I get to be center stage of an arena like this? Like sort of think Super Bowl size, right? And he said, well, what's stopping you? And I said, well, one, I don't know where to start. And two, what if people don't like me? And he goes, well, what if they don't like you? They just won't come.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm thinking. If they don't like you, they won't come.
Yeah. And he said to me, he goes, And this was a saying that I've heard many times, and other people have requoted it, and I've requoted it as well, is that his biggest thing was, look at the worst case scenario, right? So whatever that is, what is it? And then go, what if that happens? Can I handle it? Especially if you're trying to make a decision, you know, if I buy this car, if I buy that car, like, what is the worst case scenario? You get a car and you suddenly don't like it. What would you do? Can you handle that? Well, I'd just sell it. Okay, problem solved. So yeah. Now you can make a bit more of an informed decision. But if it's like, oh, if I do this, then I could seriously injure myself. Can I handle that? Hell no. Well, then the answer is no. We're not going to go ahead and do that. So this is the thing that it comes down to, what I'm hearing is your attitude, your perception, your ability to laugh at yourself. And yourself, right? Because sometimes, as you've shared, people are like, I don't think I want to listen to that, or I can't laugh at that, right? And then where are we placing our energy? Because every time we're mad, and you'd think we'd all be skinny, like, because it uses up so much energy, we're using more energy to be mad than we are to laugh and to go, oh, well, okay. And I always have had that in my head, that of the worst case, what is the worst case scenario? And I've used that a lot in my life. Like, what is the worst case scenario? Can I handle it? No. Or hold on a minute, my anxiety level is rising here with these thoughts. So I'm just going to park it and go do something a little better that brings me fun and laughter and relaxation, and then come back to it and look at it in a different perspective, a different way.
Now, I don't know if Martin ever said this to you, but he had said, laughter is the highest vibration. And people would say, no, love is. He goes, no, love is a state of being.
Yes, I remember him saying that to me. It took me a long time to understand it. Because on a
cognitive level, laughter can get you to that place.
Yeah. I remember on a cognitive level, I was like, a lot of what Martin used to say to me, I used to go, yep, right, okay.
And okay.
And I remember one day he said to me, now, have you got it? And I went, nope. And he goes, okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I went, righto. and I remember I was going through a really challenging situation. It was like really, really stressful. And I said to him, oh, hey, I have to answer this and blah, blah. It was really serious. And he turned around and he said to me, I know you're going to find this hard, but less is best. Mm-hmm. And that one stayed with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes it's less. Sometimes, but yeah. I mean, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm a very sharing, caring person, but I've had to learn around boundaries as well. And here I am at 57, learning something nearly every day.
Every day is a school day. And I'm 62. Every day is a school freaking day.
I had somebody recently say to me, it was their birthday, and I said, oh, how did you go? And she said, oh yeah, it was good, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, but, you know, it was a school night and we were out late. I'm now paying for it. So I think,
sounds like a good time to me.
And that's like sometimes too, I don't know if the listeners have noticed this as well, but sometimes it can be so easy to get in a routine of where we're not really doing a lot of things that we enjoy, and we spend more time worrying, or, you know, oh, I've got to tick this box, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. But maybe having that balance, because I know for me, I used to love the beach winter. I actually enjoy the beach spring, autumn and winter more than summer, because the summer it's too crowded, right?
Yeah, and in Florida it's just too hot. Fuck that.
Yeah. And I love, there's a couple of different beaches around where I live, and I love to go, and just some of them have like a real surf, so lot like big waves and that, and I always find that I learn something new every single time I watch it, right? Like, and I'd often always, every single time I go to the beach, I think of my dad, who's no longer with us. And I also then sometimes think of my daughter and I go, oh, I wonder, like, because we never got to spend time with Chloe. She was stillborn. And I always go, oh, I wonder what she would have thought of the beach and things like that. But there's always something new when we're open to it.
Yeah, and I have learned, you know, because I was kind of, you know, left in a foreign country alone. And you know what? I still got to be me. And the people that get it will get it. And the people that don't, won't. And so what?
Yeah.
You know, I just feel this is who I am. And I mean, Derry is probably not ready for, you know who is? The young people. My friends I hang out with are 45 and younger because I can't hang out with people my age because they're stuck in their, I don't know, they're just so old.
Different. Yeah.
And to me, you know, I'm sorry. I just believe in everything that I'm doing. And even though, like, when Andrew was telling me, you know, about writing a comedy set, I said, dude, I'm so far out of the box. Are you kidding me? You know how hard I am doing this comedy as metaphysics? And now you want me to write a comedy set about losing a kid? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And yet I did it because, you know, again, he wouldn't get out of my head. But he reminded me, you know, and when I've done it, you know, people can see the humor. I mean, yes, you know, I asked Martin, I said, you know, Martin, I don't, like I said, I don't know where your listeners are on the scale, but I said, I know you and Andrew are fine. And I said, I know I'm going to be there. And I said, I know all this stuff. Why is it so hard for me sometimes? And you know what he said? No. And I totally got it. You know what? To pretend you don't hurt is not the human experience. I came here for the human experience. The key is not to get lost in it.
Right.
It's just to experience it.
Yeah.
And I mean,
so does that mean, like, do you think that we're experiencing it and we should be just, instead of having a particular lens on, we're experiencing it through a sense of curiosity, I suppose?
Yeah, because, like, even Martin would have his dad moments and he could hear, I mean, he saw Andrew when he left his body. You know, right. He almost waved to him because I saw him physically. And, you know, and then he saw what was happening on the bed. I mean, we never lost, and he especially never lost contact with Andrew. Full conversation. Sometimes he'd see him walking through the office. And he said, but no, sometimes I have my dad moments. And he would tell Andrew, leave me alone. I'm having a dad moment. And he goes, well, hurry up. I need you to write this down. He could be that way. He goes, why aren't you that way with your mother? He goes, ah, the pretty mom, I leave her alone. No, because I would feel bad that I was sometimes really struggling with so much loss. But I thought, that's the human experience. And I thought, let me experience it. Let me feel it to get it out. And then move on. You know, because that's why we're here. It's not because we know all, you know, when you know that they're is more beyond here. And this is, you know, the vehicle, the human body is not who we are, you know? And I mean, you know, I got a better gig on the other side. I'm sure you feel too, you know, but I came here for the human experience and I'm going to see it through and I'm going to go through all of its glory and pain and everything the human experience has to offer. And that's where we have to look at it, looking at it from a higher perspective, from your higher self. Believe me, now I'm inviting my higher self to come in. Okay, let's get this arm working. All right, let's get on.
Yeah.
But when you could, I mean, watching Andrew, we went in the hospital because he was in a forced coma for 4 days. And when he came out of it, I was like, who is this kid? I mean, it was him, but magnified. And I knew it was his higher self. That had come in to finish, you know, what part of the journey. And when we can look at it as just an experience, you know, when you're going through this, I'm saying, wow, okay, now I've had a stroke. Okay, let's see what this is about, you know, and make the most of it. I mean, even with Andrew's diagnosis, when, you know, I said, all right, Muck, I said, I don't know how this has happened to you of all people, but I said, we'll see what this is about.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and we're still 16 years later. I kind of get it. When Martin and I were doing our events, I said, I get it. I get why Andrew's on the other side. Oh my God. You know, cause Martin being the medium and so, as you know, so friggin' good. Yeah. Now I'm left here alone. I'm like, seriously, you guys liked it here better than me. And then you left me here alone.
Yep.
WTF.
Yep, exactly. Well, it's been great having you on the show. We share this all over social media. It goes on to Spotify. So, you know, wherever the audience can listen to it, we've attempted to get it there. I'll also send you the link. But what we're going to do now is we're going to end the show with my song that Tatiana and Mark Watson created for me called Break Free. So we're going to go out on that song.